Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed. It's time to embrace American values. Our society is based on the freedom, not begging the government for permission. It's time to wake up, my brothers and sisters. Come check out my show every other Sunday, 8 to 9, Liberty Unabashed.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price, and after a few months, realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple, naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet, Mount Shasta spring water.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet. Join me and my friends every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. with the California Adventure District radio show, where we talk about all the amazing adventures to be had in our area, from climbing Mount Shasta, hiking the trails, kayaking, overlanding, and camping with Bigfoot. We have it all. California Adventure District. Less people, more adventure. Listen Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency child care, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
slow down.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slate, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Albee from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 14.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today's review is Michelef Grande Bold, a classic Maduro stick with a rich, dark, oily Ecuadorian broadleaf wrapper surrounding Nicaragua's best tobacco. Full-bodied and full flavor, your palate will delight with hints of dark chocolate, nuts, and cedar. Come down to the best cigar shop around. Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Redding with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Today, Simpson University continues to provide a Christ-centered education, graduating students with mature and infectious faith, critical competence, and a ready spirit to thrive as servant leaders around the world and at our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Thinking about starting a new career or upskilling for the career you have right now? It's never too late to start at Shasta College. Late start classes and 8-week compressed classes are still available. Reskill for those new jobs that are emerging in Shasta County. Find out today about their veterans programs and free tuition. All of this at Shasta College. Go to shastacollege.edu.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Ready and Electric Utility, like more than 2,000 utilities across the country, is a nonprofit public power agency owned by the customers. This year, we are celebrating 100 years of serving the city of Reading. October 3rd through the 9th is Public Power Week, and we celebrate the benefits of living in a public power community. These benefits include low rates and local control. Community ownership means your money stays right here in Reading. Publicly owned utilities like REU provide excellent service and work directly for the community.
Premier, your friendly old change. Premier in all we do.
Fall sometimes brings us smoke and ash. This is one of those years, and the health of you and your car is very important. At Premier Oil Change, our 30-point certified service will not only check the fluids in your vehicle, but will make sure to reach the areas that ash, soot, and smoke can tax, like your engine's air filter. We also check your in-cabin air filter to help the quality of air that your family breathes. This is all part of our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Services require no appointment. Wait in the comfort of your own car with free Wi-Fi and beverage. Don't forget about Premier Oil Change Rewards Program. You earn points for every dollar you spend. Add to that, free fluid top-offs. Now that's service. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com. Located in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Reading on Lake Boulevard, next to Waterworks Park, or our newest location in Anderson, across from Round Table Pizza. All three locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
People constantly make pop culture references. That's why it's called popular culture, because people are aware of it and reference it constantly. Seth Rogen.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our question of the day is,
can I use names of copywritten material in my book? Quotes and songs, that kind of thing.
Yes and no.
Do not let your entire book be citing word-for-word Twilight. That's not going to fly.
That is copyright infringement. There are some things that you can do. We're going to talk today about the specifics. Break down what you can and can't do according to the law. Now, we are not lawyers. We are not copyright experts. If you have a question, if you're concerned about it, your best bet is to go to legal sources, not some random person on the internet who says that they know a lot about it.
So one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, do you plan on making any money with the writing? If it's fan fiction or something like that, you are not going to be allowed to make money with the writing. You can write all you want, but it's when money gets entered into the equation that these questions even come up. If you don't plan on selling your book ever, then just, you know, have fun.
Skip this episode and move on. It doesn't apply to you.
Right, selfishly.
First off, if it was written 95 years ago, so as of recording right now, if it was published before 1925, you're good to go. It's in the public domain.
What is public domain?
Public domain means that it was created so long ago that it now belongs to the public in general.
This is not to say that it's uncopywritten, because in a way it is, because you cannot take the Bible word for word and publish it and copyright it and then say no one else can write it. It is in public domain, meaning it's more or less the copyright is held by everybody. So if you're writing a fan fiction of the Canterbury Tales, where they finish the travels, go for it, have fun. But you aren't allowed to make money off of Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling's world that she's built, because that's hers. She owns the copyright. She's the one you need permission from and probably need to pay a lot of money to in order to create new content in that world.
Now, there is something to help you in this, and it's called fair use. Fair use allows the use of trademarks and certain copyrighted material under very specific circumstances. There's a couple of things that you need to consider before you can classify what you're using as fair use. I got this list from Standout Books. They're a publishing services company. And they list four things that you need to consider before you can consider your use of that copyright or trademark material under fair use. The very first is if you are using it in a commercial for-profit situation, or if it is educational and or valuable in some way to humankind as a whole. Valuable to you is not valuable as a whole.
That goes back to what we started the episode with. Are you making money on it? Because that needs to come into consideration.
You also need to consider the nature of the copyrighted work and what it is that you're referencing. You cannot take, like we said, the entire script of Twilight and publish it yourself. Because that goes into the next part, is the amount of text that you are referencing. A little bit here and a little bit there is fine. Entire chunks, not so much.
Yeah, I can't copyright the word the. That's too small of an amount to limit the rest of the world from using that particular tool in their storytelling.
And the final thing is you have to consider what the effect will be on the original copyrighted work in its potential market value, which is why you can't just republish something that somebody's already written, because that directly affects their potential in the market.
So if I have a character who's 11 years old and he has a lightning scar and he discovers he's a wizard, there's going to be some issues there. If I have a character who's 11 years old and he's riding a bicycle and he flips over the top of the bicycle and he goes face first into the gravel and he ends up with a lightning scar on his head and one of the friends goes, you look like Harry Potter. And that's the end of it. That is not impacting J.K. Rowling at all, because your characters are just making a pop culture reference.
So let's break down some more of the rules in fair use and go specifically into what can and can't be used. As I mentioned briefly, many of the rules depend on how much content you include. Having a single name, like Wonder Woman, doesn't really matter. If I include a scene from the new Wonder Woman movie, word for word, verbatim, there's going to be problems.
If you're writing a nonfiction, citing sources can get a little messy. Having that bibliography at the end should help, but
there is a fine line between citing a source and straight-up plagiarism. You can cite a source, summarize, include a quote, make sure it's short, and you're fine. If you copy an entire page, if you copy even an entire paragraph, it starts to get sketchy.
A lot of that comes down to, are you claiming it as your own? If you are giving credit where credit is due, you can argue a reasonable effort. Again, consult your lawyer if this is where you are.
Especially if you are writing a nonfiction that is meant to be educational, you have a lot more freedoms under the fair use ability. Let's move on to songs.
Don't.
You can't just list the lyrics of a song. I don't care how important you think it is to your story. If it is a copyrighted song, you can't just list the lyrics and have it be part of your script. You can reference the song or the artist and say, that person is listening to this. For an example, John Green in the book Paper Towns had, they were shouting along to a song by the Mountain Goats. So they have this reference in there to a real band that made a real song, And that's okay, because it's a reference that directs the reader to that, and it doesn't take away somebody's ability to enjoy that song by the Mountain Goats.
Okay. We said never under any circumstances. If you have way too much money lying around, one, make sure you visit our Patreon page, and two, you can go to the artist and say, hey, do I have permission to use these particular lyrics and I'll pay you this much money? There are an enormous amount of other issues that come with that that I am not qualified to inform you on. It is physically possible, but...
Yes, it's a lot easier to do small references. Now, we mentioned briefly earlier fan fictions. Fan fictions are a huge, huge source for how people get started writing.
I believe it was Neil Gaiman started with a Lovecraft-Sherlock Holmes fanfiction mashup thing.
Now, if you take a look at a book like Ready Player One, is that classified as a fanfiction? There's references and everything everywhere in there.
Not technically a fanfiction. They are really close to a lot of those lines, but the characters and the world are themselves.
Yes. And that is a very good example of this fair use idea, where you can use pop culture references everywhere. Just like our quote at the beginning from Seth Rogen, pop culture references exist because people reference them everywhere. So it's totally plausible to have these references in your book without having to get permission from the author. You can't use their material exactly, but you can say she was in her Wonder Woman pajamas.
So, I've seen Blue Harvest, and I've seen Spaceballs. These are parodies, they're satires. Am I allowed to do that in my own writing?
Of course. According to the same website that I listed earlier, Standout Books, they say, quote, parody is only a legal defense if your parody is sufficiently transformative. So it has to be different enough. If you aren't changing the original base for your satire and parody enough, then you could be in serious trouble.
So what about people that actually exist? Can I say my main love interest looks like a beat-up Orlando Bloom?
Yes. The danger here is, yes, you can use names of real people, but you have to be careful of how you use them, because you can open yourself up to libel and defamation lawsuits if you are throwing these names under the bus. If they are a real person and you're accusing them of bad things, that's a really big problem.
Which is especially scary, not just for celebrities, but if you're writing an autobiography. You're much better off in not just referencing people, but everything, to make up a name that's similar and go with that.
And all you have to do in that case is at the beginning say some names, some circumstances have been changed to protect the privacy of those involved. So to kind of sum up what we've talked about in this episode, I know it's a lot of legalese that we just kind of threw at you. Yes, you can reference things. You can reference people, you can reference books, you can reference pop culture in general. That is perfectly okay. You cannot use entire characters, you can't use entire passages, you can't defame anything of a copyrighted work in your book if you're using it for profit.
But in the end, I just enjoy writing. I enjoy telling the story, I enjoy setting up the plot and putting my characters through terrible things, because in the first draft, what I always do and what you should really do is just...
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
I became a writer not principally because I'm in love with the idea of being a writer, but I'm in love with the idea of entertainment. I just want to entertain people. Lee Child.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Holt.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our master today that we will be learning from is Lee's favorite author, Lee Child. Another Lee.
Yay!
All three different spellings.
If you are listening to this episode on the day that it airs, yesterday was my birthday, so I wanted to make sure we paired this one as close to my birthday as possible because I love it so much. One of my favorite things about Lee Child is his style of writing. He is blunt, he is forthright, he is known for the Jack Reacher series, which are technically a mystery, but he's just in-your-face, short sentences, and always keeps the plot moving.
Just before we started this record, we made the comment to contrast it with the Neil Gaiman episode that we just recorded, where all the quotes from Neil Gaiman tend to be a couple of sentences long at the minimum. And then we have Lee Child, where there are several in this list that are at the most 4 words long, and it just shows the difference in writing styles. And it also shows a little bit of the difference of target audience. Lee, you share a target audience with Lee Child. I do not, so I will always take some of his advice with a grain of salt.
So the first quote that we're going to get into here is something that you may have heard more than once already, and we're only halfway through the month. It's, reading is the only thing that prepares you for being a writer. Sound familiar?
It should, because Stephen King said it, John Green said it. I don't think we got a quote from Neil Gaiman to say it.
But I'm sure he has said it before.
Probably. You have to read. You're going to find this advice from any author, and if you don't want to follow it, that is up to you. But just understand that you are ignoring the advice of many, many great authors.
This next quote is specific to his genre especially, but I think it speaks to a lot of storytelling in general.
The end of any thriller or mystery has got to be both surprising and inevitable for it to be plausible.
That is a hard line to walk. Especially because he's a pantser.
Yes. Being a mystery pantser myself, I can tell you that this is a very hard thing to do. Because you don't want it to be obvious, but you also want your readers to feel satisfied. And if the ending, if the bow on top just came out of left field, and there was no setup for it at all, your readers are going to feel robbed of the story.
There's that saying of the journey is more important than the destination. I really think that's true for structuring your story as a plotter, because we want to know that the bad guy loses and the mystery is solved and the good guys live happily ever after. We read the story to figure out how they get there, not if they get there necessarily.
Yes. So the next quote is short and sweet.
Trust yourself.
That's it. That is all the advice from that quote.
But it's good advice to have. Knowing yourself and trusting yourself to make it entertaining is a huge part of actually succeeding. Writing selfishly, enjoying the process, and trusting yourself to make it work is actually a skill.
A lot of the times when I'm running into writer's block, or what I'll call writer's block, it's because I don't trust myself enough to write what I want to have written in that scene. And that keeps me from doing a lot of stuff. So this is a piece of advice that I personally need to get better at listening to.
This next one, I think, speaks very much to his style and his storytelling and his audience. And that's,
I love stories with fast, immediate, uncomplicated storytelling.
I don't think Tolkien would agree, But I but I certainly do.
Yeah. Absolutely agree with this one. You don't need to have a complicated story for it to be a good story. The next piece of advice was said specifically for his type of genre, but I think it's something that all authors in all genres can really learn a lot from.
The way to write a thriller is to ask a question at the beginning and answer it at the end.
Whether you're writing a thriller or fantasy or even a memoir, there needs to be some question, something that is answered and resolved at the end of the book. And it doesn't have to be a complicated question.
Whodunit?
Yeah?
Asking that question at the beginning and answering it at the end is more than just thrillers. It's storytelling. This next quote I'm going to pair with another one of his because I think they go really well together. The first one is, people turn to fiction simply to get the kind of rush and enjoyment that they know they should not have in real life.
The second part of that is, the key to thrillers is vicarious pleasure.
I like this one. It's a guilty pleasure, but to see the good guy just deck the bad guy because he's a jerk, we love it. We can't do that in real life. And that's one of the reasons why, according to Lee Child, we turn to fiction, so we can see the good guy win.
And I know you're going to hate this, but I also feel like this is why romance is so popular.
But yeah, probably kind of. That vicarious pleasure of falling in love with the rich, handsome bachelor who has eyes for this nobody girl, whatever. I get that. I don't have to like it, but I get it.
As like in our last episode with our quote from Neil Gaiman about how reading is an escape. Not just escapism, but an escape. Your story can help someone live vicariously, experience things that they would never experience in their normal life. Now, I'm not encouraging you to go write a whole book from a serial killer perspective, but there's a reason why there's a whole fascination with true crime.
This next quote I kind of disagree with a little bit, but it tells a lot about his style. Every single book, I pretend in my head it's the first and last book I will ever write. Everything has to go into it.
Why do you disagree with this one?
I have ideas bursting in my head all the time. And I have to go, okay, I'm going to set that idea aside and use it for a different story. I can't put brainwashing into my swords and sorcery, into my romance, into... It just... There are too many ideas. I have to reject ideas and say I'll save it for later. Maybe that's just the plotter in me.
When I heard this quote, I wasn't thinking about, like, every idea has to go into it, but your everything has to go into it. You treat it just the same as you treat all of the other books, whether it's your first or your last. You treat it all as if it's your first foray into writing and that you know nothing about writing, but you do. I see it, I guess, a little bit differently than you need to put all of the ideas that you come up with into the same book.
But if you're worried about word count, go for it.
So our next quote is another good straight and to the point quote. There is nothing wrong with just telling the story.
No duh, but thank you for saying. I think oftentimes people go, well, I have to do this before this, or I have to explain what the scene looks like. Just tell the story. What happens next? And then what happens after that? If you feel reading it afterward that details need to be added, you can add them then. But if the details don't matter, just tell the story.
Yes. There is nothing wrong with just getting to the point of the story that you set out to write. Not all the backstory, the story.
And of course, this next one I heartily disagree with. And that's, the best piece of advice is to ignore my advice. I love so much of what Lee Child has to say, except for this one. he's having fun with writing, and so I think he feels like he doesn't have a lot of good advice. But as this episode showed, there's a lot of advice that we can really learn from, and a lot of good reminders.
But at the same time, as with any advice that you get, take it with a grain of salt. Do you share the same target audience? What is it that it's challenging you to do, and is it something that actually needs improvement? And if you don't share anything in common, if you're writing a completely different genre, if your storyline is different, then maybe you do need to ignore the advice and just write the story that's in your heart, no matter what everybody else says should be written. Because as we know, you should always be
writing selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. 1 Samuel chapter 17.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Essis. And today we are talking about basically just people, but magically bigger people.
That would be the giants. Now, we're not talking about Andre the Giant, giants, not people who are just incredibly tall. We are talking about actual mythical creatures, legends, tales of races of tall people.
Across the world, a lot of cultures show tall people as powerful people. I believe there are two different Shinto emperors who are reported to have been more than 10 feet tall. So at first sight, if your hero is encountering a giant, they can be very intimidated without even talking to or encountering physically.
So when we're talking about these mythical giants, the biggest thing about them in most legends is that they're basically people, but big. They are sometimes slower, less intelligent, but always strong.
And I've found cannibalism is something that we see a lot of, or at least eating humans in some way. You know, grind your bones for bread kind of a mantra. We see that in a couple of different giant stories around the world.
I have a hard time siding with Jack on the Jack and the Beanstalk story. What would you do if somebody invaded your house and stole your stuff?
Probably exactly the same thing.
So let's get into some examples of giant or large, intimidating, strong creatures. Of course, you have your trolls and your ogres and your orcs.
A lot of the references to giants are an alternate race, similar to elves and dwarves, where they are human-like, but not. They aren't exactly gods. They aren't demonic in any way. They're mostly just a different kind of people.
In Norse mythology, you have the Jotuns.
And to be clear, the Avengers mythology as well.
Of course, the frost giants from Jotunheim are very based on this race of giants in Norse mythology.
There was a carving that was dated to about the 10th century AD of, I'm not going to try to pronounce her name because I'm going to butcher it, but one of the Jotun riding a dog, like a horse, might have been a wolf. And she had, like, reins on it, but the reins were made of snakes. It was a very interesting depiction of, because most of the time when we see giants, we don't see them using tools in that kind of a sophisticated way. It's mostly like a club and smash Harry Potter in the bathroom. And, of course, heading south to the Middle East, the Judeo-Christian history, we have the Philistines, which our opener was referencing, these gigantic warrior-type people.
Even if you aren't super familiar with the Judeo-Christian beliefs, you likely have heard the term Goliath. You've heard that and know that it references a giant, a huge human that is not easily defeated. So if we want to go down under to Australia, there is an oral tradition of a giant known as Crooked Mick.
If you're listening from the U.S., you probably know who Paul Bunyan is. Crooked Mick is like Paul Bunyan, but cooler. Not only does he like chop down stuff and shear sheep and such, but he makes great pies, apparently.
Not only are his pies good, but they are light, so light that a gust of wind can carry them away. And not only are pies getting carried away, if he kicks a crocodile, he can send it to the moon. I love this, and it's just so much fun that you've just got this, like, Australian bushman that's going out there kicking crocodiles and baking pies.
So you want to look that one up? That's Crooked Mick.
And then, of course, you have a giant that is super familiar because of its prominence in Greek and Roman tradition, and that's the Cyclops.
He's also familiar because he's the dude with one eye. Which is interesting because most of the depictions I see of the Cyclops, he has the holes in the face in a normal where humans would have eyes, but they're just sort of skinned over, and then he has a third eye at the top of the center of the forehead. I always thought that was weird. It wasn't like they were, like, merged, you know?
I'm just picturing the Cyclops and Hercules, the Disney animated version, where it's just, like, one big eye that's, like, half his face in the middle of his forehead. He has a very tall forehead as a result.
Most of the ones we've talked about so far are enemies of humans in some way.
Except for Crooked Mick. He's saving them from the crocodile.
Okay, that's fair. I am talking about the Gentile, I believe it's pronounced. These are a race of giants found in the northern parts of Spain, close to where it meets France in that little bay there. They existed and they basically just hung out with the humans, and they were really known for their ability to throw rocks, and that's how a bunch of little islands off the coast were formed. But they were said to have lived alongside the Basque people at one point.
They were also said to have invented metallurgy, the saw, and grew the first wheat, and then taught the humans how to farm.
Most of them disappeared when the comet flew across the sky around the same time that Christ was born. That was sort of a harbinger for them to go, okay, it's bedtime, and they basically just went and lived under a mountain. And of a lot of the giants we find, these ones are furry, they're hairier, until we get into more modern mythology and cryptozoology.
Fun cryptozoology. If we want to go a little coastal islander, in Fijian mythology, there is a giant who was so large that his teeth looked like they were burning logs. And that is why his name is Flaming Teeth.
So he basically tortured the humans in the village for so long that a bunch of warriors went, lured him under a big rock, and then pushed it over on him. He died, and his teeth were brought back to the village, which brought fire to the humans.
Fascinating. And then if we go to Eastern Asian cultures and mythologies, the Hindu and Buddhist cultures have the Rakshasas, and they were depicted as shape-shifting, fierce-looking, enormous creatures with two fangs that protruded from the top of their mouth.
They have a lot of similarities between them and a lot of the vampire mythology.
Oh.
The shape-shifting, the eating people, needing to be invited into a building. These are all Rakshasa tropes that also appear with vampires, which we'll talk about in 3 episodes.
Yes.
These ones are a little strange because I didn't necessarily want to put shapeshifters in with giants because giants are naturally large creatures, and these ones can appear humanoid, but they are described as giant, larger than, scarier than humans, and with a lot more magical abilities than most giants we're going to see. And again, eating people is a thing.
So let's look into the literature and references to giants in fiction as we know it today in modern ages.
Of course, from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels, we have the Brobdingnag, which is a giant and opposite the Lilliputians, which are the tiny people we talked about a couple episodes ago.
And Gulliver's like the normal-sized person in the middle?
Yep.
Okay.
But if you're younger and you're looking for it, Roald Dahl has the BFG.
Big Friendly Giant. One of my favorites is actually Fezzik from The Princess Bride. Absolutely love him. So great. And then the classic example, the Cyclops from Odyssey.
And the last one I just want to touch on, because I think this is how most people are familiar with giants and trolls and half-giants and such, is Harry Potter. We see trolls in the first book, and then one of the closest friends of the main characters is half-giant.
Yeah, and in Harry Potter, the half-giants are especially considered, looked down on as lesser beings because of their mixed race.
So if I'm being plagued by a giant, how do I take it down?
Just make them fall over.
Okay. Crushing under their own weight. We see this a couple of different ways. We see that, of course, in Mickey Mouse had some of that. And I think the most classic version is Jack and the Beanstalk.
When he makes the giant fall off the beanstalk, chops it down while the giant's climbing down. Another thing when it comes to giants is the eyes tend to be vulnerable, especially with your Cyclopses.
And I believe that's how the hero actually defeated the Cyclops, was he drove a spear or a lance into the Cyclops' eye.
And in general, you deal with a giant the same way you would deal with a human. They're stronger, they're bigger, but they have the same kind of vulnerabilities. Their anatomy is generally the same.
Of course, you could go with the Princess Bride logic and the Fijian logic.
The moment his head is in view, hit it with a rock!
Seem to work for them. They have fire. And in general, most of the time you're going to see your heroes be smarter and more agile than your giants.
D&D stats, they have better dexterity.
Yep.
I hope this information has helped you, given a few ideas about introducing a giant character or giant race into your stories.
And these are an easy one, I think, to slip in, because it's not like the Chimera, which we'll talk about next episode. Basically, everyone in your audience goes, giant, right, I have an image of that in my head. I don't need a 3-page description in order to follow the plot.
So go out, create, have fun, put giants into your story, and always
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is the second generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only 4 AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
When a unicorn is slain, men have destroyed again the image of beauty that they seek. Nicholas Stewart Gray.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hole.
And I'm Lee Esses.
October is our favorite month because we both really like Halloween. So for this October, we decided to take on the topic of monsters, creatures, things that go bump in the night.
We have been fairly academic over the summer and much of the spring. We wanted to have a little fun with this series. So we are starting with the brightest monsters that we can think of, the wholesome, the good ones. And then we are ending with the darkest monsters of all, the scary ones. As we get closer to Halloween, we're going to have more and more fun in this regard.
Yes. So let's get into today's topic. Monsters associated with good, with light, with purity. Because monsters aren't all evil, dangerous, and out to kill us. The definition of monster is usually just kind of an unusual creature outside of the norm.
Something that's been affected by magic in some way.
And unicorns fit that definition. The oldest reference was in the 4th century AD by a Greek physician. I don't even want to try to say his name. But that physician described unicorns as a wild ass as large as a horse with a white body, a red head, and dark blue eyes. The horn was about a foot and a half long, and it was red, white, and black. There really isn't any modern description of a unicorn that fits this.
I think when it started getting associated with purity, that was when all things that were good and wholesome were also associated with the color white in Europe, versus evil was dark and black. So I think they moved it toward the white. So our traditional image of a unicorn now is closer to all white, somewhat sparkly.
That description came around in about the 12th century AD. That's when they tried to bring the mythological lore of Greek and Roman beliefs into Christianity. Here's the weird thing, though. They, at that time in the 12th century, were described about the size of a goat. So small, little things, instead of a wild ass as large as a horse.
And along with that image of purity was that a unicorn would only come to a chaste virgin.
A lot of these themes are in the old movie, Legend, that has Tom Cruise, Tim Curry, and a couple of unicorns. Weird show. But it has that kind of theme to it of unicorns are associated with sexual purity.
I mentioned the horn being sort of not only what makes a unicorn unique and sort of by definition a unicorn, but that also tends to be where a lot of the magic is held in this magical creature. And it turns out that they actually bought and sold unicorn horns at one point during medieval Renaissance time.
They were used a lot in the medieval times in alchemical pursuits, as a way to cure poison, to identify poison. At least that's their belief. But what were these unicorn horns in reality?
Narwhal horns. It turns out they thought that the Vikings were particularly good at hunting unicorns because they came up with all sorts of unicorn horns. And to give you an idea of how much a horn was worth in that time period, there are records of people trading an entire castle for a unicorn horn. So the Vikings are like, narwhal horns.
They kind of look like unicorn horns.
Lop them off, bring them down. Hey guys, can I have a castle? And they did this, not once, not twice, but for 5 centuries.
Yeah, so great. So Queen Elizabeth in the 1570s had a unicorn horn. She drank out of a unicorn horn cup, and it was actually a narwhal horn. I love the history of unicorns. But it's not just in Western culture that a unicorn-type creature is associated with purity. A lot of Asian cultures have a creature similar to the unicorn. It's often called the Asian unicorn or the Chinese unicorn, but it's called in Chinese the Kilin or in Japanese the Kirin. I'm really sorry. I'm going to be butchering some of these pronunciations. I am trying my best.
I first learned it as a Kirin, K-I-R-I-N, which is the Japanese version of this. but they will occasionally be portrayed.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.